listening to Oblivion. It is February 20th, 2023. David, Joe Biden, great leader of world history, just saved Ukraine. He flew in to Kiev secretly, on tethered to a balloon. one of our the U.S. spy balloons that, you know, famously balloons can just maneuver into just anywhere you want, right? So, you know, they just attached him to the balloon, and there in Washington, D.C., in the Rose Garden, White House, and let him loose, and, you know, just hours later, there he was in Kiev to give solace to the Ukrainian people. And I commend him. It reminded me of the uplifting time when W flew in on the mission accomplished.
I was just thinking about that.
Landing in there. Of course, this is somewhat different. It's like mission in peril. We got to show that we're there. You know, I don't know what exactly the purpose.
Ukraine is mission will be accomplished.
Yeah.
And Iraq was mission accomplished. But I think where the significant connection is, last night was the first time I had heard anyone give a time frame for what supposedly was going to happen and when this investment, as Zelensky has called it, is going to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And Zelensky claims that if he gets everything that he needs, then Ukraine will win the war by the end of the year.
Mm.
But this sounds an awful lot alike. An awful lot like mission accomplished, right? Which was said by W on the aircraft carrier when Bush flew the fighter jet in, took off his helmet, and they had the banner mission accomplished. And of course, that war went on for another 8 years.
Well, and yeah, the best was yet to come as far as Iraq was concerned.
By 2004, which was an election year, and of course, Americans had to keep Bush in there. But by 2004, it had Iraq had turned into an absolute bloodbath. There was an insurgency. There was an incredibly bloody and murderous battle in Fallujah. There were scores of Americans getting killed. And that was really the first time when I learned about the mentality of the American people in terms of the death toll in war, which is it just never matters, because the number of people, the number of American soldiers getting killed kept going up. It was more and more every day, and it would be reported. But the sentiment, the mentality never changed. There certainly wasn't going to be any anti-war movement. There wasn't going to be any peace and love going on. And what I realized, didn't take that long to realize, is that eventually the day will come when the numbers will go down. Like, it won't go up every single day. And as soon as the numbers go down, everyone will say, see, it was worth it. And the same thing is going on in Ukraine, where nobody could care less how many people have been killed and are being killed right now and will get killed over the coming year, including young Ukrainian men, right, who instead of enjoying their lives and being teenagers, which is what an 18, 19-year-old is, they have to, as a child, right, who in the United States wouldn't even be trusted to buy alcohol, you know, and certainly can't have any of the marijuana. They have to be soldiers, and they have to fight in a war, and many of them are going to die. And we don't care about this because our attention is drawn to the palaces and the estates, like the White House, of the people at the top of the hierarchy. And all we do is we get lost in these elites and what they're telling us. But when you brought up George W. Bush, I thought George W. Bush is the perfect parallel to Zelensky, right? Because they both wear the costume of the warrior. Since this war has begun, I've never once seen Zelensky in coat and tie. He's always wearing military-looking outfits, either the olive green or he's got the light brown sand-colored pants.
Yeah, and I guess nowadays they, as far as the optics, they made sure he didn't like have one of these silly sort of like, I don't know, what would be a good example, maybe Gaddafi or whatever, with his neo military uniform on with a gigantic thing like the U.S. generals or all the generals, you know, how they look.
Right, where they have all of
the breast, their thingies on their breast, whatever that's called. And, you know, sometimes it's ridiculous. You see some of these high level.
Right. He's not wearing the stripes or the ornamentation.
He's more like a guerrilla fighter. Yeah,
exactly. A mercenary.
Yeah. So that's what
but
you.
Of course,
that's what you got to.
Not.
Yeah.
Doing any fighting. And,
yeah.
You know, he's the most insulated person in Ukraine. And.
Just quickly, as far as you're lamenting the. How in the Iraq War the deaths weren't looked at. I mean, sure, the numbers were reported rather diligently as far as the U.S. Military deaths in Iraq, Afghanistan, etc. But as far as the by far much higher, you know, 10, 100, 1,000 times higher death toll in these places, that was rarely, if ever, mentioned at all. And of course, it was like in the case of Fallujah, it was just like basically a city of terrorists, right? That, you know, sure, the town was leveled and thousands of quote civilians, which, you know, our military, there's no such thing really, right? If you're part of the military, if you're part of the enemy country, we have all these safeguards supposedly against killing civilians, but you know, it's when it happens all the time and nothing ever happens about it, and there's sometimes apologies and sometimes there's a little compensation given, but yeah, as far as that's concerned, the United States' populace is totally insulated from it, mainly just because of propaganda of the media, right? You, all you'll see is the great heroes, the number count for the great heroes. And as far as the, you know, say if you even theoretically it was 1,000 people that were, quote, military in Iraq that were killed, you know, that's never in the military mindset. You know, that doesn't count. Those aren't real people like we are.
Yeah. Right. Well, there's no question that the propaganda has an influence, but I think it's the more basic explanation is that people only want to listen to what they want to believe, right? And that's why the propaganda is effective. I mean, if the media started telling people that elephants could fly, and that was on every channel and every internet site, people aren't going to believe it, right? Just because it's the message that they're getting over and over. The getting the message over and over and over is effective because the message is telling the person what the person wants to hear. And I would go back to the 2016 Democratic primary between Hillary Chardonnay Clinton and Bernie the crybaby Sanders, right, to say that we know that if there is a somewhat educated group of people in the United States, we would associate those people with the Democrats, at least in terms of being credentialed and having degrees. So I'm leaving sort of the masses and certainly the far right Republicans out of the question. And Democrats knew that the Iraq war was based on a lie, and they knew that Hillary Clinton had voted for the war, but they didn't really care, right? So I think it's the one thing I would say is I think that you're getting the sequence reversed. First you have what the person wants to believe, right? Then the propaganda comes in and becomes effective at encouraging that and reinforcing it, right? Versus the person is a blank slate and they're just sleepwalking through life, and then they get this barrage of messages, and then they say, well, this is what I'm going to believe because this
well,
is what
I but I'm not
told.
Saying that. I mean, basically from birth, we're all steeped in the same thing. I mean, I wasn't immune from growing up in this militant culture that we were in.
But that
supports
my point, doesn't it? You're still able to think through it because you don't really want to believe this, and neither do I. I don't want to sit there and think every day that a bunch of people get killed that it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that. If you're constantly told that what anything that the U.S. does, if, you know, the military is doing this, they're doing it to save our lives, to be defensive, to protect us, et cetera, et cetera. And people do believe that, right. And they're not thinking of it as the more skeptic or whatever. Unless given other information that this is actually behind a lot of this is just pure brutality. And rarely, if ever, I don't know of many examples of violence or being a positive thing. I'm more radically than even many pacifists or anti-war people. I don't think that World War II had anything positive about it. It was not in any way a good war and was just a terrible thing for, it's basically led directly to the current state of affairs. So across the board, that's, something that I've come to believe and see. Now, I had some advantages, right? I had just a predilection to learn, which is not necessarily a terribly common intellectualism isn't the core of our culture, right? So outlier there, and then had some other interesting experiences, like my granddaddy Miller, who fought in Okinawa, told me that when I was young, that I asked him about the war, and he said war was always a negative, and it's always lost. It's not a good thing, he knew firsthand the truth of the matter, right? And his experience didn't make him into a more bloodthirsty person. He was basically saw how insane and bad the whole scene was, right? But he did, of course, was a human and supported his fellow, was a veteran supporter all his life, and treated everybody that was involved with humanity, but he didn't think the whole project was a good war, right? Yeah. So that I had certain particular, through my life, experiences, influences, propaganda, whatever you want to call it, learning experiences that, you know, most people don't get at all. And even with that, you have to have a little bit more basis of, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I have my current beliefs of, we're getting quite meta here as far as anti-war sentiments. And, oh, which reminds me, we need to talk a little bit about the anti-war rally that happened yesterday.
Oh, wow. Okay. if I can just jump in with one quick observation. When you mentioned your predilection to learning, was that the term that you used?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, that's, again, that supports my point that people are not a blank slate, right? I mean, we all have a predilection towards something,
right?
We're not just an empty sponge that's going to just automatically soak up whatever's put in front of us. So it should be, the reaction should be to learn, right, rather than just want to clamor with the herd, right, and be popular. I think one of the many evil causes of the way Americans think about war is the egomania of the American, and the American has to be popular and has to fit in. So if the herd is warmongering, you have to go along with it.
Right.
Whereas something like the counterculture is all on purpose breaking from the herd,
breaking
from the culture.
Right.
And beginning your own thing, because you realize that the culture, that the majority, just because it is the majority, can still be completely wrong.
Right.
And I can't, especially again with this coming on the heels of the Afghanistan war, and people who have hung up on me when I've had conversations about this escalating Ukraine conflict and acting like what just happened in Afghanistan doesn't matter at all and wouldn't factor the least into the credibility and the trustworthiness of the American military, nor would you have any reason to doubt the American military's capacity to actually accomplish its mission, right? Unless, of course, the mission is a forever war, which I think that was all along the whole point of the Afghanistan war. And before we get to the anti-war rally that you're going to tell us about, I'd like to say something real quick about the C-SPAN piece that I saw. And it was pretty disheartening, because C-SPAN is usually a reliable source of enlightened voices. But this was just a group of people who were all there to tell each other what they wanted to hear, including the Prime Minister of Poland and Kentucky's Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
And then toward the end of this discussion, this young woman who works, I think, in the U.S. Foreign Affairs Office in Europe, asked a question, but it was really a statement guised as a question, which is that she said, it seems like we're only giving Ukraine just enough so that we can have a forever war instead of giving them everything that they need so that we can win the war. And we've been told that if we just give them everything that they need, that that'll be escalatory. That was the term she used. We should be giving them everything that they need so that we can win this war, and not just so and not just giving them just enough so that they can survive. And then she says, so I wonder why we're doing that. Of course, really what she's doing is she's just making a statement and advocating for a policy. And guess who jumps in right away and says, well, yes, I think you're right. That's exactly what I think. McConnell. And so I have to wonder about people who call themselves liberals and Democrats and they're cozying up to Mitch McConnell, who is a completely rotten person, and one of the sources, one of the serious power brokers of the far right Republican Party, that among other things took away the constitutional right to abortion. Anyway, she never took into consideration what the rebuttal to her own point would be, which is that if you escalate, we're going to have a nuclear war. And how do you justify putting life on Earth at risk over this one conflict? And then the other thing that she didn't take into consideration is just the simplistic attitude that she brings, that if the United States simply gives Ukraine all it needs to win the war, Ukraine will win, as though there's no opposing force, right? I mean, what happens if Russia escalates? What happens if China starts arming Russia, which Secretary of State Blinken says is already happening, right? She just acts like, well, if we put this much money into the vending machine, then we'll get a victory bar. And that's it. Yeah, right? There aren't any possible negatives about escalating or giving Ukraine everything that it needs. So it'll be interesting. It's a paradox. It'll be both interesting and totally predictable to see what all of these people are saying a year from now, when after the 1 year that Zelensky says that he needs to win this war, it's either still going, right, or all of us are dead.
Well, yeah, and really I think they don't believe, of course they don't believe there's a risk of nuclear war. They kind of use that as a scare, a thing. They don't believe that themselves, and, you know, chances are still low, but it's not way more than zero, right, that would happen from the Ukraine war situation. I mean, really, I think what they want is, what I think is happening right now is there's a lot of worry because they fear that, you know, the Soviets have had time to build, Russia, of course, they have the same mindset, the Cold War mindset is still being applied, so why not say Soviet? But anyway, Russian buildup is worrying them, and so they're, you know, parachuting into Kiev and talking about, you know, got to do full press here,
and so it's pride and ego.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah.
You don't wanna look weak on the world stage,
right? And these psychos that are the, defense. What's the defense secretary? Blinken, is that his name? Or is that...
I think Blinken's the Secretary of State.
Yeah, which there's no difference anymore, right? Blinken is like, he's the big hawk, right? He's the guy who's always being bellicose and is pushing for...
China must never do this again.
Yeah.
We're
no more balloons released.
Don't let me ever catch you with your hand in the cookie jar again.
So, yeah, we're going to have to talk a little more about the balloon.
The fortune cookie jar, I should have said.
So, yeah, let's go to a little balloon talk quickly before other subjects. To put a bow on Ukraine, yeah, I think there's a lot of worry right now. It's not looking too good for them as far as it being either a forever war or, I think that's what they prefer, because you can just keep this game going forever and I'm writing down something else I remembered. There's the Seymour Hersh article about the U.S. bombing up the pipeline. I don't know if you heard about that story.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, quickly, we were talking about anti-war subject, and there was a Rage Against the War Machine was the name of this rally that was yesterday. It had been planned for at least a month or more. And when I first heard about it, it was a little worrying. I first heard about it because Tulsi Gabbard was going to talk at it. And I looked at it more closely, and it was mainly the Libertarian Party, which has gotten, by the way, much more pro-war, even though they're claiming this is anti-war rally. And, of course, we've talked about Tulsi Gabbard, the totally fake and quote anti-war and very big quotes candidate. I mean, she was the Hawaiian legislator in Congress representative, and she was also ran for president in 2020, and
I believe so.
Yeah, and she had a branding thing that she, you know, claimed to be anti-war, but it was very thin sauce and it was always very vague. And of course, since then, she's turned into this like hardcore right winger, right? She's just like, apparently she's a leader of a cult. It's this Hawaiian, and, you know, it's just amazing these things were brought out like during the primary. I mean, surely they could have figured this out, but you know, she was raised in a cult, basically like a kind of a Swami guru type Californian that claims he's like the new Krishna or whatever. And, you know, and it's a very like anti-gay type cult, weird old cult, you know, that she's a part of. And that's come out in full spades. You know, she's, you know, she went around the country before the election at GOP rallies, and they was talking about, you know, the groomer thing and that the trans are, you know, we can't have kids being taught the trans lifestyle and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so she was, when she was invited to that, I was like, oh, that's weird. So I looked at it more closely, and there's the, for instance, libertarians, which are, you know, right wing to start with, but you know, I'm fine with the group of I don't know how to phrase this. I support the anti-war position of libertarians. Now, with the caveat that you know, for instance, Ron Paul was at this anti-war rally, and you know, his position is not the moral one that we share. More primarily,
it's fiscally irresponsible,
right? That we shouldn't be spending money on these wars is what it comes down to. You know,
in other words, if we could do all this for free, why not?
Yeah, I mean that's the most important thing, is that the government shouldn't spend any money on anything. Basically, and that's the hardcore libertarian position, which Ron Paul really upholds. As ridiculous as that is, they can talk themselves into that. So you have that figure. Now, there was Dennis Kucinich. Now, he's a real OG as far as anti-war, and a believable, incredible person. So that was good, I guess. And let's see, Jill Stein was there and spoke. Now, some more controversial Jimmy Dore was there, and you know, he had a little bit of, I didn't read his whole speech, but I heard that on top of a little bit of anti-war stuff, a lot of it was like anti-vax stuff,
right? They're piggybacking, they're using the rally to get their own agenda.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what Jimmy Dore, you know, he had this push to the right where he embraced the anti-vax thing wholeheartedly, and is like one of the main people, along with who's the big podcaster,
Alex Jones.
No. Well, I'm sure Alex Jones is against the vaccines too, but
Oblivion. Oh wait, that's us.
Oblivion. Yeah, everybody knows our millions of listeners know our opinion about that. But yeah, it's not coming to mind. He's in the number one podcast. He was the comedian. MMA advocate.
Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, it's amazing. I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, so there was this rally, and it was very, you saw pictures from the stage, and the crowd was very thin. It was the same place that Martin Luther King, there on the, at the edge of the pool, overlooking the monument, and it was, you know, barely filled in between the monument and the pool, and there was definitely nobody wrapping around the sides, you know. So it was also advertised on Fox and Tucker Carlson's show. He promoted it on that, and even with that promotion, there was still, it was so thinly. It was a pretty nice looking day too. So. Pretty sad sack, and you know, there were apparently LaRoucheites. I don't know if you remember Lyndon LaRouche and his kind of cult group.
I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, they're still around, man. He's dead as a doornail, but there's a LaRoucheite group that's still, they're kind of like a right-wing troll people that go around and disrupt things and spend a lot of time online, you know, fucking with people. And yeah, they're a really weird group, and apparently there were some Oath Keepers, and so, you know, and Chris Hedges was there, and he was, had beforehand, I didn't read it because I didn't want to get too annoyed at him, but he had a thing on needing to have a left-right coalition, anti-war coalition, which, you know, I don't know what to think about it. I sort of agree and sort of don't, because it's sort of like going on Tucker Carlson. If you're like a supposedly a left person and you go on Tucker Carlson, like, now I don't think any of these people really are in the long run, but you know, Jimmy Dore comes on and says some anti, you know, military industrial complex stuff on Tucker Carlson. And he would claim, well, you know, this is the only place I can get on. I can't get on CNN or, you know, MSNBC because I'm canceled by the libs, and I have to come on here to give that kind of message. And I don't endorse Tucker Carlson and his show or anything else. I'm just on this. But I think the bad thing about this argument is that you are part of his show if you go on his fucking show, right? And right. The rest of the show is going on, and it's got full of his, like, racist and, you know, anti-China, hardcore militarism, and every other kind of nut job thing.
Culture war.
Culture war stuff that's just nonstop. And then I'm not sure what the function of these supposedly left people is in that scenario. What do you think the reason?
Self-promotion.
So that's largely
get,
in that
somehow broadcast.
Right, and they're
totally
saying
right that they don't take into consideration the cost of what they're doing, that you are part of the program. Like, this isn't just simply you getting your message out there. You're just part of the Tucker Carlson show, which is a horrible program.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you watch it very much, but clips.
Well, I don't, but I do watch it for the sake of, right. I want to know.
See what the enemy
what's
is
going on. I want to see what it's like, so I know what I'm dealing with.
Right, yeah. And, it's just horrific.
I would just interject quickly that it seems that, like, the right-wing trolls and these other, the libertarians and these other right-wing groups, I can't help but think that their main motivation is that there's a Democrat in the White House. And so it's simplistic attitude of, well, since there's a Democrat in the White House and we're escalating things in Ukraine, I'm going to be against it just because I'm against the Democrats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
There were Republicans in the White House.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we could go back to the Iraq War or to the Afghanistan War. I seriously doubt that you saw right-wing people getting involved in the anti-war movement. Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't really see anyone getting involved in the anti-war movement, because certainly they're just after 9/11, for that first year anyway, everybody was on board with having a war. Everyone, Democrats, liberals, because it's that herd mentality, and people wanted to get swept up into this warmongering frenzy of vengeance.
It's a frenzy, man. So yeah, let's
frenzy of vengeance. I think we have
Code Pink, the anti-war mostly female group, that a lot of the times they disrupt meetings with they're big into disrupting and getting anti-war information and shaming people in meetings in public as much as they can. So, yeah, I love them. They weren't, they bowed out of that because, I guess they thought it was just too right-wing. They didn't want to get mixed in with it. And they actually are next month planning their own rally with a different group. So, we'll see if it's any better attended. I mean, the Democrats really have pulled off an amazing feat, and, there was all this street stuff going on. I mean, sure, some of it was due to the pandemic, but, people were out on the streets hardcore during the Trump era. And as soon as Biden got in there, it's like, well, I guess we're just kind of, it's all over with. And, we had these horrific killing in Memphis. Why aren't people out in the streets more, man? It's really disheartening. It's like
that's a good point. I noticed that, but it's I think that the machine has gotten really good at countering any kind of uprising.
Right.
I mean, they saw those George Floyd protests in 2020. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is never going to happen again.
Right.
I mean, that summer of 2020 was an accelerated and condensed version, you could say, of the counterculture, or at least a significant part of the counterculture, which was the protest. I mean, you didn't have, of course, the enlightened thought, or the you certainly didn't have the peace and love, because we know those are completely unsavory aspirations. As far as Americans are concerned, right? You don't want to be enlightened. Peace and love is for cowards and weirdos and perverts. But at least in terms of protest, that did come on pretty strong during the summer of 2020. And then, just like the Reagan Revolution completely dismantled the counterculture or whatever vestiges or roots or tentacles that might have been able to take in root from the late 60s, early 70s, and the protests of the Vietnam War, just immediately all of this was squashed.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That, I mean, it is disheartening to see the total lack of protest. And I also think that you're right in that there's a shallowness in that if the one and only bad president we've ever had, if he's not in the White House, well, there's really no need to protest.
Right. Yeah. Or
Biden, we're not even going to consider that Biden might be just as bad as Trump, or in some ways even worse.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with who's worse. It's still a shit sandwich. I mean, sure, you put a little spice, is a different spice on the shit sandwich. It's Yeah, how do you rate that? It's still going to be a one star, right?
Okay. Well, it's appearance and personality.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, right. Biden is narcoleptic.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like he's almost asleep, and it's like he's putting you to sleep, very much like the Obamacon, right?
Yeah.
Although with Obamacon, it was more putting the smoothie on the smooth.
Right, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Biden doesn't have the energy, the charisma to even be smooth, but he just talks in this completely scripted, mm-hmm. low volume, elderly, to put it nicely, way that's just about taming you and just putting you to sleep, right? And then Trump, of course, is a blowhard, mm-hmm. and a loudmouth, right?
Yeah, so that's what it comes down to. All American
all I'm
attitude.
Saying is, you know, beyond the appearance and personality, is there really any kind of meaningful difference between the three presidents?
It's the same machine going on, same assholes. Yeah,
same policy, same mentality. Yeah.
So let's quickly go by Ohio. You saw, of course, Ohio, we're talking about East Palestine, or the train derailment of the chemicals, and the subsequent burning of the chemicals instead of trying to reclaim them or whatever. They just burn them, which is maybe not the best thing to do. You know, got rid of the evidence, that's for sure. But you noticed that there were some stories, and I've assumed they were in response to the East Palestine story, was that, you know, that small town Ohio will be helped out by weapons production for Ukraine. And, you mentioned the story. I don't know. Surely there aren't huge plants there, but maybe there's more than I know about, you know.
Well, it's interesting because you were talking about World War II earlier. Mm. I think it's an appeal to the that narrative of World War II being that how it was just so great all the way around. You know, we defeated evil. We were the good guys, the greatest generation, the sacrifice, rationing everything. Of course, these were all things that we hated doing during the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? But among the other virtues of war, as this distorted pathological perspective would have it, is that it everybody's working and everybody's being productive, and look at the great American machine. These small towns where instead of everybody's poor and they've got to get help from the government, they've got jobs and people are busy, and only in America do we have the work ethic and the great unregulated system, the privatized system where people can just get to work and they can make all of these weapons, right?
Yeah, they can take their plows that they used to use in their agricultural communities and turn them into... the plowshares, swords into plowshares. Is that what it is? Yeah. Anyway, but inverted world.
But in terms of I just to spend a moment on the East Palestine story, it's definitely just about the recklessness of a poorly regulated system. Like, these extremely dangerous chemicals shouldn't be included in regular cargo that's just, you know, going to be moving right through people's backyards, basically.
Right. Right?
Which is where this derailment happened.
Mm, yeah.
And I did hear a commentary arguing that you were talking about pipelines earlier, that, you know, wouldn't it be better to use pipelines to ship and to transport these really dangerous things? And we know from them, I mean, if you're just driving on the interstate, sometimes you'll see these trucks, right? And, you know, caution, highly flammable, dangerous. It's like, what is this thing doing on the road with pedestrian traffic and transportation, right? Like, here's a family going to the baseball game, right? Here's somebody driving back home. Here's somebody moving with their pets and their carpets and their furniture. And then here's a bunch of highly flammable, highly toxic chemicals and fuels. Mm-hmm. And let's just all blend it in together. And again, this is the anti-intellectual, anti-enlightenment American that you can't point out how stupid this is, right? That these shouldn't be all grouped in together, right? And that you're a total phony when you talk about safety and that you care about the American people when you let these things happen. But the reality is that there's when they did this controlled burn, and I've got to talk about the interview with Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, and they asked Governor DeWine, I said, you know, when you did this quote unquote controlled burn, and there's this giant plume of smoke going up into the atmosphere, did you then just think it was going to disappear? Right? Like, what did you think was going to happen with all of that stuff that you explode right over this town? And he basically just has this blank look on his face and he says, well, I don't really know the science about that. Right. And so that's America, right? This person is going to be the governor. It's the most powerful person in the state. And he's got to be one of the stupidest people that you can find. Right. It has to be one of the dumbest. That's definitely Reagan Revolution at work. And then to make it doubly science abandoned, right, or science abandoned times two, or science abandoned squared, is DeWine can't so much as avail himself of a scientist who could briefly and concisely inform him of what was actually happening and going to happen when you blew all of this stuff up, set it on fire, and let this giant smoke plume rise over an entire town, right? So he couldn't do either one of those, right? He can't be a somewhat smart person. You can't have that as your leader. And he can't bring in some smart people to at least be involved in the discussion and the decision making, right? And in this era of when we say we're against big government, you know, only the government makes any of these calls and decisions. And so the reality is that people think they're getting sick, that they have chest pains, that they have a raspy voice and headaches. I mean, these are all the telltale signs that you've been poisoned, right? And then we have all of the dead fish and birds and other animals and pets dying everywhere. And of course the government is saying it's okay to drink the water, it's okay to breathe the air. Right. And I think where it all ties in together is Joe foreign policy Biden, right after the Michigan State shooting and with what really is a crisis going on in East Palestine, Ohio. I mean, it's definitely an emergency. I mean, maybe it's not doesn't have the scale to be called a crisis, but it's certainly an emergency of national significance. Biden, like all American presidents in our lifetime, uses war and foreign policy and America as the defender of the free world as an excuse just to bolt and split, right? Not only is he not in East Palestine, not only does he not go to East Lansing, right, to give a talk and to show some leadership and to offer some comfort and compassion like a good leader would to the Michigan State students and the Michigan State community. He just flies off to Kyiv to do what Zelensky did around Christmas, right? Which is to grandstand and to drum up all of this craziness about being enthusiastic about having yet another war.
Go, go, go. Yeah. One last balloon thing that I heard, that apparently one of the balloons, one of these unidentified flying objects, and surprise, surprise, they gave up the search for finding them. They were just, some reason they didn't keep looking until they finally found these possible spy balloons. But apparently one of the balloons was a hobbyist balloon that some high schoolers Minnesota or something like that released. And apparently you can get these things. Well, it said the report I saw was $12 balloon. Probably it was a little more than that, but you know, there was like a tracker on it, a GPS tracker, maybe even used some room entry data thing to tell you where it was. And that's why they suspected that's what happened, because, you know, the exact same time that one of these balloons was shot down, their signal to their balloon disappeared, right? So, you know, it was estimated $2 million to shoot down this hobbyist balloon. So, go Biden, man. What a hero. What a fucking
Joe
hero.
Ford policy Biden.
So, yeah, to go still in the Biden wheelhouse is the war on drugs. And you mentioned that Kentucky legislature wants to ban Delta 8, which I've described before as this kind of loophole that occurred in Kentucky, where basically, because Delta 8, this analog, or you can convert CBD, which is kind of gray zone legal, right? Only Delta 9, THC, is the thing that's really straight up illegal, right? And so they were able to convert the CBD into this Delta 8, which gets you just about, you know, gets you high, right? I mean, it's same buzz as Delta 9. It's just not as strong, so you'd have to just smoke more to get as high. But yeah, of course, you know, once that was found out enough, you know, our hardcore right-wing legislature has got to, like, clamp down on the Delta 8.
Right, so instead of legalizing marijuana like all the other states around Kentucky are doing, we're going to make something that's, we're going to make legal Delta 8 illegal, right? But then we're going to talk about freedom, right? And get the government out of the way.
Right.
Right. And then
yeah.
Another thing is, you've got Bashir signing into law the tax cut, right? And that's what freedom is. I don't have to pay taxes, right? I get to keep my money. But a tax cut only benefits the wealthy, because they keep a much higher, the percentage, of course, is the same, right? But when, depending on how much money you make, that number increases significantly, right? So 3% of 10, right, is 3, but 3% of 100 is 30. So you get to keep $3, the other person gets to keep 30, and then proportionally the ratio stays constant as you raise the level of money. But yeah, I mean, how people can believe themselves to believe in freedom, or how they can claim to believe in freedom, and all they want to do is make things illegal and punish people. That's it. I mean, to bring it back to Ukraine, one of the most sickening things I heard is when Biden is, you know, advocating for this, you know, open check to Ukraine, give Ukraine everything that it wants, the fighter jets, the Patriot missiles, the artillery, those other things that I think I mentioned in my text, right? And he says, this is about freedom. And this is doublethink, right, from 1984. It's dystopian, right, except it's a slight rearrangement, right? You've got ignorance is strength, slavery is freedom, war is peace, right? And then so you rearrange the slavery is freedom and the war is peace with, you know, war is freedom. And so you could say that another outcome of that is that slavery is peace, right? Let's all be slaves. That's how we have peace. And then freedom means war. And then what we've seen in the Biden presidency is Roe versus Wade got overturned. And of course, as I think we both knew, marijuana remains illegal. And Kentucky's not at all budging forward. And it doesn't surprise me, but I'm not hearing anything happening with the medical marijuana finally getting legalized. And Beshear, as they say, partially legalized it through his executive order. And he said in his State of the State address to the legislature, he said he expects the legislature to pass medical marijuana. But where I fault Beshear is, like Democrats in general, right? He takes the tiniest. His actions aren't proportional to the need that he's supposedly trying to meet, right? Or is it to overcome the opposition that he faces? And what Beshear isn't doing is he's not telling the legislature, he's not putting a check on the legislature, he's not telling the legislature, if you don't legalize medical marijuana, this is what I'm going to do next, right? And since he's just so tentative, and I think himself is just so incredibly conservative, though maybe not completely far-right, hardcore, like the legislature is, he's not bringing any leverage. He's not putting any political pressure on the legislature by doing the one executive order and then saying, well, that's all I'm going to do, and then I'll just expect the legislature will legalize it. But yeah, all the way around, I mean, we see the same, you know, criminality of everything. Oh, another thing that's going to happen with the Kentucky legislature is it looks like they're going to outlaw drag shows.
All right, man. Yeah, getting into so
you get your guns and we can have more mass shootings. I think it's been like a record number of mass shootings for like the first 2 months of a year.
We broke the record.
That'd make Abbott in Texas proud. Everybody gets you a gun, right? You can have a gun, no abortion, no drag shows, no marijuana, and that's freedom, right? And let's have another war.
Good times,
a
man.
Frenzy of vengeance.
Frenzy. I'd love a good frenzy.
For my co-host, David Vernon Miller, this is Dr. David W. Overby, and you've been listening to the Oblivion Podcast.
And a frenetic goodbye.